Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Network Sunday, September 16th, 2018. This is episode 1524. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy.
Hello there and welcome to The Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about computers, mobile phones, gadgets, and anything else that's tech related. Plus, we'll take your calls and answer your questions if you need help or advice with something. I know a lot of you are wondering about the new iPhones or new phones in general. Lots of new gadgets coming out in time for the holidays, so we can talk about all that. My name is Rich DeMuro. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 News in Los Angeles, filling in for Leo Laporte today. Thanks, Leo, for letting me do this. Happy to be with you today to talk about my favorite topic, which has been one of my favorite topics for a long time, and that is technology. This is all about helping you get the most out of your gadgets, figuring out the problems with them or the little things that irk you about them, and also telling you some good things along the way that I think you should know about, things that happen in the tech world or just things that I think you need to do, which is one of them I'll talk about now, because I've been watching what's happening on the East Coast with the whole hurricane. And pinged my family back there to make sure they're okay. Number one, I got some family in North Carolina. So I want to say thoughts go out to everyone that's affected by the natural disaster. But the thing that this makes me think about as a tech person is what you would lose in a situation like this. If your home was flooded, and there's natural disasters all over America. We always talk about, you know, the safest place to live in America. There really isn't one, because no matter where you live, whether it's, you know, the East Coast, the West Coast, Northeast, Southeast, there's always something. There's something in every corner that's lurking. You know, in California, you've got the earthquakes. East Coast, you've got hurricanes. You've got tornadoes. You've got flooding. You've got extreme heat. So no matter where you are, there's something that could go wrong. And I don't tell you this to scare you, but I'm just saying, like, with our digital world nowadays, we've gotten a lot better because we can store a lot of stuff in the cloud and it's safe forever, theoretically, right? And this didn't happen with the analog stuff of days past, and we still have a lot of that. So if you're of a certain age, you probably have a whole bunch of stuff around your house, like boxes of videotapes, boxes of photos, and perhaps film as well. And you sit there and you know that you need to get this stuff kind of digitized. You know that you need to get this stuff in a format that will stick around for a while. But guess what? It's one of those projects that you put off and you put off and you put off. And myself included. But recently I have gotten more serious about this. And I did a segment a couple of weeks ago on TV about digitizing your old videos, like your home videos. And I found it really fascinating because the toughest part of the whole process, by the way, was finding the devices to play the old videos. So for instance, in my family, my father had kept our old camcorder, at least one of them. But the problem is when I hooked it up to my computer, it didn't actually work to play the tape. So I went on eBay to look for these things. And I will tell you this, it is not that easy to find a good VCR on eBay or a good Hi8 camcorder or a good VHS-C camcorder. You can find them. They're expensive because people know that these are in demand because everyone that's buying them is using them to digitize their old stuff. So that's my number one thing. You are ahead of this game if you kept your old player. So if you kept the tapes, that's great. Hopefully you did because they have the memories on them. But if you kept your player, that's a good thing. So here's what you need. And it's actually quite simple. So there's two ways you could do it. You could either send these things out. A lot of people like to bring them to like a place like Costco. Even your neighborhood drugstore will do it. They all send them to this company called Yes Video most of the time. But to me, I was not comfortable sending my tapes somewhere because if you send them out in the mail and something happens to them, That's it. There's no other copy that you have. So for me personally, I made the decision to do this myself. And it does take time. That's the biggest investment. Because the equipment to do it, like I said, you need the camcorder and you need a video capture device, which are quite cheap. I tested two of them. I actually tested three. The first one I tested is the Elgato video capture for Mac and PC. I only tested on the Mac, but this works beautifully. It's a little bit more expensive than some of the other digitizing programs out there, or capture cards, I should say, but it works really well. It's about $80. The other one I tested for PC is Roxio Easy VHS to DVD 3, and that one worked really well. I think I paid $45 on Amazon, and that worked with my Windows computer, and they both work the same way. You plug them in to your camcorder or player using the old cables, right? Those cables that have the red, the yellow, and the white. We're so used to HDMI these days, but if you're listening to this and you remember that, yeah, that's how we plugged in video. And if you have a S-Video connection, that's even better because you'll get a slightly better video quality if you use that. So I actually use that with my Hi8. I use the S-Video plus the two audio left and right. The other thing you'll notice if you search one of these things on eBay, which you can search like VHS to digital converter, you'll find a lot of them in the $28 price range. Don't get those. You will be so frustrated with them that they will not be worth it. Just go with one of these, the Elgato or the Roxio, and you'll really like them. And by the way, I have these linked on my website too. RichOnTech.tv is where I put all my links. And of course, it will be on the TechGuyLabs.com website as well. So that's it. Once you get this all connected, you'll see your video on your computer screen, you press record, and you go grab a cup of coffee because it all happens in real time. And that is the longest part of the process, is letting these tapes play out so they can record onto your computer. But once that's done, it's pretty simple. Now you've got this file, which, you know, is kind of big, so you got to make sure you have a lot of hard drive space on your computer. You get this file, you can trim the in and the out, and that's it. And then now you have your tape saved forever. But of course, you have to back it up. So don't forget that you need to back up these files from your computer to the cloud. So keep them in two places, usually I recommend. So I really like Google Photos, photos.google.com. Drag and drop the file on your desktop to the website once you log in, and that will upload it. And you can upload as many as you want for free, which is really cool. Another option is actually YouTube. So you can upload your video there. You just want to probably make sure that you choose the unlisted option. You don't really want other random people kind of looking at your random old family memories. Maybe you do. I don't know. Who cares, right? But the cool thing about Google Photos is that it can slice and dice your pictures, and it can also kind of see who is in those videos. So if you want to see all the picture or all the videos that include, you know, your mom or your dad or your late uncle, you can see that in Google Photos, which is really fun. But that's it. Then you email the link out to friends and family, and they're going to love it. My family's been loving seeing all these old videos, and you can get really creative. You can go through and actually clip all the videos, because the way we used to record stuff was really long. So you'd have a 90-minute tape, and there'd be 10 different events on there. You know, the graduation, the baptism, the wedding, Christmas Eve. You know, all these different things would be on one tape. Nowadays, we just record little clips on our cell phone, and so those are already split up by the nature of them. I also talk about digitizing your photos as well, and a great article. I used actually a service out of Irvine, California called scanmyphotos.com. I actually gave them my pictures. They scanned them all for me. It happened in like 2 days. It was amazing. They've got some tips on their website about actually saving pictures if they were damaged by water. I didn't realize, but you actually want to keep them kind of wet, because the problem is when you get the water damage and they dry out, guess what? All those pictures stick to each other, and you're never going to be able to pull them apart without ruining the entire picture. So they have some good tips on their website about keeping these things wet and how to actually rescue them if they did get wet. Now, that's, again, sending it away. You have to put a little faith in the system, right? Because you're sending your photos to a place where they're going to be digitized. And once they're digitized, they're safe. But in that process of getting there and back, it is a little dicey. You never know. Something could happen. So again, I tested a system from Epson. This is called the Fast Photo FF640 scanner. And I did this with my mom. We got a whole bunch of photos from her garage, and we put them through this scanner that does 30 photos at a time, and it was great. It does the front and the back at the same time, which I thought was really cool. The downside to this scanner, which is amazing, is that it's expensive. It's $650. But I think my mom said it best. She said that you buy it with your other family members. Digitize your pictures. Everyone can chip in and share it. And then once you're done using it, you get all your pictures scanned and uploaded to the cloud. And now you can give this thing to someone else. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. We'll take your calls next at 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Let's talk some tech. Welcome back to The Tech Guy, the show where we talk about computers, phones, gadgets, whatever you need. Whatever you need help with, whatever you need advice on. Rich DeMuro in today for Leo Laporte. We're taking your calls at 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. When you call in, you'll be talking to Kim Schaffer. Kim, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are the calls doing? Are we getting some?
We are.
All right.
We are all over the map today.
So you're telling me people are still having issues with their technology.
That's never going to change. You're always going to have problems.
Even in 2018, I thought, I thought we learned everything we needed to know about tech. But I guess not.
No, there's your job security.
Yeah.
Job security for you and Leo.
And you.
Oh, yeah. There, too. No, you know what? My job can easily be taken over by a robot.
Oh, you think? I don't think the robot, they did do that Google Duplex thing, which talks kind of back and forth, but I don't think it could get the nuances of what you do. So I think you're safe.
Hope so.
Tell me what's going on this morning.
We've got Michael in Worcester, Massachusetts, and he needs to scan some documents into a computer and then edit them. Do you know of a way to do that? Can you help him?
I don't know. We'll find out. Let's see. Let's talk to Michael. Michael, what's going on?
Hi, Rich. I'm one of those guys who gives you job security because I'm relatively tech illiterate, computer illiterate. So I have a task before me to edit some documents for a friend that he has lost the digital versions of, some old papers that he had written. And he wants me to, as I said, edit them. So I guess what I'll have to do is scan them and create, I guess, an image PDF and then find some way to edit those image PDFs. And I wonder if you could, I can discern, I think, a number of ways to do it, and I'm wondering what the best way is.
So are these documents photos or they, you said text, like things he wrote. So are these more like written things?
Text, yes.
Okay.
Yes, text documents, papers, old papers.
You're going to love this because the solution I'm going to give you is 100% free.
Oh, okay.
And it's so easy. I just did this the other day and it was amazing. So on our refrigerator, we've got like a little emergency, for the kids with the babysitter, all the data, who to call, what to do, all that good stuff, all the information that the babysitter needs, right? Well, my wife had written this thing out and she put it in Google Docs and I wanted to revise it because it's been a couple of years and I couldn't find it in our Google Docs that were shared. And she was off like in the middle of nowhere. At a wedding, so there was no real way for me to contact her. She was like in the middle of the woods. So I was like, let me just do this. I didn't want to retype everything, right? Because she already had the basics on there. Mm-hmm. So here's what I did. And this is what will work for you, and it will work beautifully, and it will be so easy. Do you have a phone?
I do.
What kind?
Dumb phone.
Okay. Oh, you have a dumb phone. Oh, no. Uh-oh, that's going to make it tougher.
Yeah.
Well, you got to find someone. You got to find someone with a phone for this one, okay? So you need to grab a smartphone from someone and get the app Google Keep, okay? And this is a free app from Google that's kind of like a note-taking app, but it's got some really powerful functionality in there. And some of the functionality in there is that, number one, when you can use it to take pictures of things, and you can actually search inside those pictures, which is really cool. So let's say you took a picture of a business card. You could search for text on that business card because it recognizes the text in there, which is really neat. That's a side note.
Okay.
But this is
it's
a free app.
Google.
Yeah, Google Keep, it's called.
Keep.
And it's free. It's on iOS and Android. And so what you do is you get this app, you put it on the phone, and now you take these documents, right, page by page, and you just take a picture of the page. Okay? Now you have
to
give
these mobile imaging apps.
Yeah, it's more of just a note app. It's just an app to take notes. But it, like I said, at the face, it's to take notes. But underneath, it actually has a lot of more powerful Google-y features. So you take a picture of each one of the pages, right? And the secret is you have to kind of wait a second for this thing to process in the background on the Google Cloud, right? But once it does, you're going to get an option in the menu to grab image copy or image text, rather, right? And what this will do is, in a second, it will grab all the text that's in that document and make it so it's copy and pastable. And once it's copy and pastable, now you can go into Google Docs and reformat whatever you need to do and just repeat that process for all the different pages and the documents. And it is right on. The OCR on this thing is amazing. And it's free. Now, there's other ways of doing it. There's OCR programs and stuff, and you can buy a scanner, and you can put the pages through the scanner. But to me, this is the simplest, easiest way for free. You literally just have to find someone with a smartphone, and I'm sure you know someone that has one of these things. And that's it.
Most of the people I know have
smartphones.
I'm the only person that has a dumb phone that I know.
Yeah, and that's fine. You probably have a lot less stress in your life because you don't need to worry about what's going on with your smartphone all the time and those notifications. But this
is. And I love it when the bill time comes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't like it because my bill automatically gets drafted, so I get a nice text when my bill comes out, and I'm just like, oh, you already took the money out. I didn't even get an option to, you know, you don't even pay your bill anymore with these. The wireless companies now have it where they just automatically draft if you want to save like $5 a month, you know what I mean? So everyone does it, but they just take the money. Anyway, that is what I recommend, Michael. I think that that's going to be a simple way to do it. If you want to get more complicated, there's, you know, there's other ways of doing it, but I think that that's just the easiest, simplest way. And again, it all just starts with that app from Google called Google Keep. Is that going to work, you think?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. It would involve him borrowing someone's phone, I guess.
I mean, the other option is you're going to have to get a scanner. So, I mean, do you have one of those all-in-one machines, like a fax kind of thing?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No. But I can buy a scanner. Would I want one with OCR capability, or would I want to just...
Most of those all-in-one machines come with like some sort of software built in. It may not be a standard OCR software, like the most full-featured, but there's enough online to help you kind of supplement that. So I think that if you have a scanner and you can scan those pages, the number one thing you need to do is get these pages into the computer. And then once you do that, if you get those pages in, by the way, on the computer, you can actually drag and drop them into Google Keep on the website and do it that way, Michael. So no matter what, you just have to get these pages scanned in. But I say do it the free route and just find a friend that has a phone and you can easily take pictures of these pages, get them into Google Keep, and there you go. Bring those documents back to life. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. We'll take more of your calls next at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Let's see. Good morning. Note 9 or iPhone Max? Oh, gosh. That's such a tough one because the Android nerd in me likes the Note 9. Everything okay? Android nerd in me likes the Note 9, but the iPhone Max is just, it's, you know, the difference is you get the applications and Apple-y features with the iPhone, right? And the Apple-y features I'm talking about are FaceTime, iMessage, CarPlay, and, you know, the apps generally have more robust features. Now, personally, I like the way the apps work better on Android because there's not as much, like, dancing around what you want to do because of the way that... because of the way that iOS is sandbox versus Android, which everything can sort of interact. So to give you an example of that, like let's say you click on a YouTube video in an app, right? Well, most of the time that video is going to open up inside some sort of little browser in that app and you get like the YouTube mobile site and then you can go and you can click like open in YouTube. You know what I mean? Like it's just like extra steps. Whereas if you click any link anywhere on the Note 9, a YouTube link is going to bring you to the YouTube app, right? It's just like little things like that. Do I like the Samsung S9 Plus? Yeah, I think so. The S9 Plus is amazing. If you don't need the stylus, then definitely go with the the S9 Plus. There's no need for the stylus and the battery is pretty good, but the battery's great on the S9 Plus. So I think Samsung's doing some really nice things, but I think it's tough when you look at that Apple ecosystem and compare them. It is tough because it's just a different world. Apple has a couple little things that I really do like, especially when it comes to the watch. And I don't know. The Note 9, Keith says, comes in purple and the iPhone does not, so get the Note 9. Yeah, that is a nice color, the lavender. It is a very nice color. So it's tough. It's really like it's become a real preference in what you like, how you like your phone to act versus kind of what the phones are capable of. Like, it's really almost like, to me, it's thinking about the way Apple does things versus Android. Like, to me, Apple is very much controlling your experience on that phone. It does a lot of amazing things, but it's a very controlled experience. One of them being, like, anytime you click on a link, it's going to go to what Apple wants that link to go to, which I'm not a fan of personally. But it works, you know, because it's more secure. It's sandbox. Every app sort of on its own. Welcome back to The Tech Guy, the show where we talk about technology and help you out with your gadgets, apps, questions, whatever you need. I'm Rich DeMuro, in today for Leo Laporte. Thanks so much for joining me. Give me a call, 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Let's go to Scott in Arlington, Texas. Scott, you have a question. What's going on?
Hey, Rich. I've got an Apple device that's iPhone 6. I've got several high-dollar cords, Native Union, Nomad, the heavy-duty reinforced cord. I charge my phone only with them, and every once in a while, the thing shows, pops up and says that the...
Hey, Scott, hold on a second. Are you in a wind tunnel? Are you at the top of a...
I'm in a car.
You're what?
I'm in a car.
Oh, you're in a car. Okay. I mean, are the windows up? I feel like I'm going through the car wash with you right now.
The air conditioner.
Oh, I see. So you've got... Okay, well, I like the fact that your phone is nice and braced with some sort of thing, but it's by the vent, right? Is that what's happening?
Well, no, I'm speaking to you through some... bone conducting headphones.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds better. Whatever you did. Whatever you did sounds better.
I turned down the fan.
Okay. So you've got these accessories, you said. You bought some cables for your iPhone from good brands. Like you said, you mentioned Nomad, and I heard some other ones in there.
There's a Native Union. I use an Anchor battery.
Okay.
And I use the iPhone charging block, and I also charge with my car inverter that you were talking about earlier. The problem is... Every once in a while, without warning, it pops up and says the device is no longer, may not be supported, and it stops the charging sequence. And I can be going along and, you know, in my car, and suddenly my phone is dead because I thought it was charging.
That's not good.
And I've got several friends that are reporting the same issue. And, you know, these are all iPhone-certified components. And I don't understand why the phones don't support it and will stop the charging.
And it's happening with all of these different devices, like all of the different cables you're using. It's happening with
any combination of the products, including the Apple charging block.
Interesting. Okay, well, here's what I think is happening. A couple things. And I think you touched upon this a little bit, Scott. You said that they're all certified, right? So Apple does have a program called Apple MFI, which is made for iPhone, basically. And, you know, the whole thing about Lightning is that it is a proprietary standard that Apple created. And yes, accessories can make an Apple connection or a Lightning connection for your iPhone, but it's not. Some of them are not certified by Apple. And you can actually go on a special website Apple has set up, mfi.apple.com, and you can search for your accessory and see, you know, the brand. Like if I search for, you know, a brand, let's see, like Nomad, like you mentioned, and it will tell me all the accessories that are sold and approved by Apple, basically, from this certification. So they call it the MFI self-certification. I'm looking at Nomad, like you mentioned, which is a great little brand, by the way, out of Santa Barbara, California. They make some really nice like leather cases and just cool little... I have one of their battery chargers. It's like a cable with a battery built in, a backup battery. And all their stuff is certified, you know? So I think what's happening is it could be a few things. So number one, I would check... It could be your phone is defective. That's number one. Because if you're getting this, if you got this on one accessory that you bought at the checkout stand at a convenience store, I'd say it's probably the cable is not very good, right? But since it's happening with all of this stuff, I think it's probably either your phone, there's a problem with that. I think it is your phone. It's not the accessories because they're all fine. So I would say it either is something to do with your phone that is just not good, like it either has a problem, it needs to be looked at, but I think it could also be the connector slot itself. And this is something I know it's so simple, but a lot of times those little connector slots get some gunk in there because we put the phone in our pocket, you know, if you're driving, whatever, dust gets into it and these things can get a little bit messed up. And so I think what you want to do is kind of you want to poke around in there, but not really. Like, you know, maybe take like a little toothpick and kind of clean it out. Maybe there's some lint in there. Maybe take a Q-tip and kind of just run it through there just to maybe clear out anything that might be in there. I personally do a little, I was going to say WD-40. Do not do that. But maybe like a little bit of canned air. You know, I kind of clean my phones. I give them a nice cleaning every month or so. Spray a little canned air very gently. You want to be gentle because you don't want to ruin anything, right? So again, these things are $1,000 piece of equipment. You don't want to mess it up. So, it's just anything you could do to get that connector port cleaned could help. So I think that's maybe what's happening there with your devices, is that there's something that's getting between the connection. And I agree, when you see that connector and you thought your phone was charging for a long time, that's a problem when it wasn't. So good question, and hopefully that should help you out, Scott. I think that go ahead and clean that. And if it doesn't work, you know, take it to the Apple store and see what they say and just say, hey, look, this is what's happening. I think it's my phone, perhaps. All right. Similar question, it sounds like, from Marianne in Santa Barbara. Speak of Santa Barbara. We just talked about Santa Barbara. Marianne.
Hi there. I'm on the road, but I'm not driving.
Okay.
I have a similar problem. My iPhone 6, I thought was charging in my car. Turned out it wasn't. My husband's iPhone 6 does charge with the same exact cable.
I think now, when did this start happening? So it's a 6. So that means you've had this thing for a while, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And did this just start?
He has had his battery replaced.
Oh, he has. Oh, okay.
But I haven't.
Now, on your iPhone 6, do you have the latest software, the iOS 11?
I don't know.
Okay. So I think you need to look in your software to see if you have iOS 11, because Apple added this thing that actually, now when you look at your phone, does it...
I can't get into my phone because it's dead and it's not recharging.
Oh, it's 100% dead.
Yeah, it went down to 5%.
And it never came back.
I turned it off and it never came back on.
Oh, wow. And you've tried various chargers with this. Oh, wow. Okay. It sounds like you could have a battery that is faulty. And the only way you're going to be able to tell that is by bringing it to the Apple store and letting them do a diagnostic on this device. Now,
okay.
Number two, I would try to plug it in and see, you know, like, I assume you've left it plugged in for a while and tried to turn it on that way?
Correct.
Like at your house, not in your car.
Oh, no, I'm still on the road. So try that at home.
Oh, yeah, definitely try. Yeah, go to home. Because the problem is, depending on the type of charger you have in your car, it may not be spitting out the proper wattage that your phone needs to actually kind of get to the point where it needs to juice up. It may be draining and trying to recharge at the same time. There could be an issue there. So
I'm working with my husband's phone. He has the same phone. So.
Well, it just depends. But like I said, your phone is in such a dire dire battery level right now that your phone may be protecting itself because it's not getting the charge it needs to keep everything kind of running.
Should I try the canned air trick?
I would. I mean, I think you charge it at home. Yeah, canned air, but be very gentle. We don't want to ruin these devices. But I think that the proper steps for you, Marianne, I think is really you need to take this thing, you know, charge it at home, plug it in, see if it's going to work, you know, see if it comes on after like a half an hour being plugged into the wall using the plug and cable that Apple supplied in the box. And if that doesn't work, then yes, I would kind of clean out the bottom, the connector, make sure everything's nice and clean and there's nothing blocking it. And then I would also bring it to the Apple store if it still doesn't work, and they'll be able to look at that. Now, for the rest of you, if you go into your iPhone, if you look into settings, there is a new setting a new section called battery. And you can go into settings, general, and look at battery, and you can see battery health on your phone. And right now I'm looking at mine, and my capacity of my battery is at 95% with peak performance. And that is not 95% charged. That means that my battery is operating at 95% of its potential. So check that setting and see. If you're lower, you could bring it to the Apple Store, and they can replace it for you. You're listening to The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Call me with your questions. Back after this. I'm going to rest my vocal cords for a moment. Let's hear from Leo himself. Hey, Leo.
The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. We'll get back to the show in a second, but let me tell you about the number one mortgage lender in the country, number one in volume, number one in your hearts, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, 8 years in a row, Quicken Loans. I love these guys. They love geeks. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage, an entirely online mortgage approval process. And now they're doing even more for their customers with something Quicken Loans calls the power buying process. Here's how it works. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You don't go to the bank. You don't have to fill out a big, long application. You just answer a few simple questions. You can do this on your phone if you want, an open house even. You get to choose based on income, assets, and credit. The loans for which you qualify, the down payment, the term, you set it all up. Now, in 24 hours, a loan officer will look at this, then give you something they call verified approval. Now you have the strength of a cash buyer. When you're going in with verified approval, you got that letter, you show your realtor, the seller's realtor, and they say, oh, they're good for it. No contingencies, we like that. Verified approval. And once you're verified, step three, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. It locks your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. This has been a concern now in the last few months because interest rates have been ticking up. And if you're looking for a house, you don't want that pressure of, we got to find a house now. We better buy this one, even though it's not perfect, just because interest rates could go up tomorrow. That's no good. With Rate Shield approval, the interest rates can't go up for up to 90 days. They can go down, by the way. If rates go down, your rate will go down, but your rate is locked in. That's great. Takes all the anxiety out of it. Well, not all, but most of it. Certainly the rate anxiety, right? It's exactly what you'd expect from America's largest and best mortgage lender, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data, in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. This is rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You can go there right now and get it started. Then when it's time to buy, you'll be ready. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Now we go back to the Tech Guy Show.
Welcome back to the Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today, taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536, discussing technology and giving you advice on anything you need help with when it comes to tech. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles, filling in for Leo today. You can learn more about me on my Facebook page, facebook.com/richontech. Adrian is in Laredo. Adrian, what's on your mind?
I have an issue down here. I'm getting a service provider from a rural area, and my router all of a sudden started sending very low speeds.
Okay.
So I talked to these guys, and they came in and checked the modem, and the modem was doing fine. So I went out and purchased another router, a Netgear R7000T, and it has the same issue. So I was wondering, is there something else I need to look for before buying a router?
Well, here's the thing. So who's your? You said you live in a rural area. So
that's right.
Who's your provider?
ACI Global.
Okay, and what speed are they giving you?
18 megabits down and 2 up.
So you're getting 18 down, 2 up, which is quite slow. 18 is okay. So now, okay, so you're telling me what happens when you do a test when your computer is hooked up to their modem? You get 18 on your speed test?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And now when you put your router between the...
I'm getting about 0.8 down and 0.4 up.
Oh, wow. And you're talking when it's... Now, what about if you plug your computer into the router?
The same.
Okay. And the company came out, they tested it, and they said, okay, everything's good on our end. Have a good day.
That's right. The router is messed up. So the original router, it's Netgear R6200.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's the router. I think you said you bought a new one, right? The Netgear R7000T?
P, yeah, P. Oh, yeah, I went over at Best Buy. I bought it and hooked it up, and I was getting the same issue.
Okay. And how much was this router? Let's see. This is this is a nice router. You've got a whole bunch of stuff going on here. It's a good router. So, I think there's some kind of disconnect between the modem and the router. What I would recommend doing is, have you tried resetting everything back to factory, like the modem that you have?
Yes, I did that. I did the factory reset on the router. Also, I changed the cable from the modem to the router. I did almost everything. I changed almost everything before buying the new one.
So you're pretty frustrated at this point.
Yeah. Then I bought the new one and I hook it up and it's still the same issue. Now I was able to get my hands on an older Netgear 4500. And that one is working great.
But you don't get the range.
Yeah, I don't get the range. That's the problem.
But when you plug that in, you're telling me you're getting 18 on your computer?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Is there something that's configured on this new modem that... Did you change any of the configurations on the new modem, like when you're going through the setup screens?
No, just basic what they told me, just DHCP. I get it through DHCP from the provider, and I left everything the same. I just changed my wireless name and my password,
right.
And that's it.
Hmm. Could it be the cable? Did you use the same cable?
I changed cable twice.
And the cable didn't do anything?
No.
Hmm. It seems odd that it would be giving you such a low speed. Now, one other thing does your modem that you have from the cable company, does that have Wi-Fi built into it?
No, it doesn't.
It does not.
It's just a modem. It's just a blank modem. No. If you plug in your computer, it will give you the public IP address to the computer. It would not give you a private IP.
If you plug it in, it gives you a public. Okay. I don't think there's a problem with the router. I think it's something in the setup of this entire thing, because you're telling me that you're getting it when you try it with the old router. But with the old router connected, you're saying you're not getting the distance you want in your house, right?
That's right.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's some kind of setting on the new router that's not communicating properly with the modem, and I think that's what's going on here, because the new router that you have, I rarely have heard that a router is problematic. I think that usually it comes down to the settings on that router, and I think there's some sort of setting that is not communicating properly with the modem. And I think that's what you need to investigate here. And it's probably something that's pretty simple, but it's in those settings. So I would personally, if it was me and I had this problem at my house, here's what I'd do in this order. I would, number one, unplug everything. Number two, I would start by factory resetting the router from the cable company, set that all up and make sure everything is working fine, right? Plug in my computer, plug in the cable. Use the you said it didn't have Wi-Fi, so just plug in my computer, go to fast.com, and check the speed of the service that you're getting on your computer. If that's all working, then we're at a good spot. Now we turn off that, connect our router, and plug it in and make sure that router has been factory refreshed and go through the setup process. Don't change anything. Make sure it's connected to the modem and let it kind of talk to each other and figure things out. And then again, try the Wi-Fi and on your computer and see what happens. Actually, first I would try a networked connection where you're plugged in, and go to fast.com from your computer when your computer is plugged into the back of the router. And then I would go to the Wi-Fi and see what happens. If all that stuff doesn't work, I think you need to look at those settings and kind of just change some of the standard settings on the router and see if that talks to it in a better way. I think that's probably what's going on. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking about a new iPhone right now because the new ones just launched, the iPhone XS, the XS Max, and the the 10R. So many new names of these things. But here's the thing. Good article from 9to5 Mac. Ben Lovejoy writes about something that I always think about and how I actually buy my phones. So everyone's doing that upgrade program, right? Because it's super easy. You pay $50 a month, right? And you get your phone, plus you get Apple Care. But what he argues is that you'd do much better if you bought the phone outright and then sold it later on via eBay or one of these trade-in programs that are not through the carriers, right? And by doing his math, he says, you know, if you buy the phone for $1,000 and then you sell it on eBay, let's say an average of $700, which I think is a little bit high, but he says you're now paying $282 for another year instead of the $500 you'd pay through Apple's upgrade program if you did their math, right? So bottom line is, I agree with him, but I think the problem that, and he kind of mentions this, is that everyone wants easy, right? If you're paying $50 a month to Apple, that's just easy. It's just simple. But if you buy the phone outright, number one, you have to have $1,000 plus to put outright because you got to plunk down the cash for that phone full price. And then you have to wait a year or two to get back some of that money to put it towards the next phone. But what I like that he does recommend, and if you can do this, I think that is the best way to buy an iPhone. Because the thing about iPhones is they do not lose their value like other phones do. And my recommendation, as well as his, and this is what I do with my wife's, is I just put on not on eBay, but I put it on Facebook. You say, hey, look, I've got the old iPhone X. Who wants to buy it? And, you know, you come up with a fair price. It's your friends that you're selling it to and family. So you will save a lot of money doing it that way. So if you're thinking of upgrading, definitely consider that route. You're listening to The Tech Guy, Rich DeMuro, in for Leo Laporte today. More of your calls and questions at 8888-ASK-LEO in a bit. Oh, interesting. Steve Clark says on Twitter that some of the newer Netgear routers enable QoS by default and slow down the connection, both wired and Wi-Fi. That's interesting. So that's something that he probably wants to disable on his. Yeah, I agree. Twisted Mister. That's not going to reserve 95% of the bandwidth. Seems a little crazy. I don't know what's going on there, but that seemed a little insane. I definitely think that you get... I know I have Eero, so I get my full internet speed everywhere in my house, but I know with old routers, especially like a standard Netgear, you'd get, you know, like 50% of your speed. Oh, let's talk about this. We'll talk about this. The IPAWS National Test. What does IPAWS stand for?
P-A-W-S?
IPAWS. I-P-A-W-S.
Well, I bet it has something to do with taking a walk with your dog.
Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. So I guess, interesting, I guess they've always done the local ones, but I guess they've never done a national. Wow, that's pretty interesting. All right, fly. Shoo, fly. Integrated Public Alert and Warning System sounds like an Apple dog, IPAWS. Yeah, it sounds like if Apple ever came out with a collar. Yeah, we are definitely going to talk about this FEMA thing because I think people are going to go nutty when they hear this, when they see this thing on their phone this week. But it is fascinating. I mean, the idea that the government can text every phone at the same time is pretty insane. Yeah, they should have called it Lassie, huh? All right, let's see. I have a Motorola a few days ago. I noticed my internet was a little funny when it came to downloading a very large file. Checked my internet, getting 65 down. Yeah, I mean, it depends on your modem or your Wi-Fi setup. But generally, like I said before I got my Eero, I was only getting half. I pay for 100 and I was only getting like half in parts of my house. Now with Eero, I get 120 in every part of my house. So, and then hopefully Yeah, 50-50 would be pretty nice. I just want a gig. I want a gig down and a gig up. That would be amazing because then I could finally organize my Google Photos because my goal is to download my entire Google Drive, organize it all, deduplicate everything, and then upload it all back. But that's there's no way I'm doing that on a I have 100 down and 10 up. There's no way. I need to do it here right now in this studio. Let's see what I'm getting here. Getting 120 down, but this is the guest network, so. I found a neat technology that seems to work better than Wi-Fi. It's called cables. I don't know. My Eero works great. Oh, I'm getting 160. I mean, my Eero is amazing. It literally gets exactly the speed I pay for. And before that, I had Luma, which was fine. I think it worked pretty well, actually. I don't know whatever happened to Luma. Are they still around? Oh my gosh, they might not be. Luma Internet. I guess it's still... Is it still around? Yeah, it's still around. You never hear about it anymore. Gosh, it's crazy. You never hear about Luma. Oh wow, a one pack. Now they're selling a one pack for $150? It's crazy. I bought the Luma one because you can't have a gig up. It would be competing with retail broadcasters. I thought when I did a story about the gig that the guy had at his house, he had a gig up. It was like 780 up.
You're live.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy, the show where we talk about computers, phones, gadgets, more, whatever you need. Plus, we're taking your calls. So if you need help with something, you need some advice, you want to know which new phone to get, which accessory to get, you want to know if there's an app that does something that you wonder about, give me a call. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. I'm Rich DeMuro. You might have noticed I'm not Leo Laporte. Leo's on vacation, so I am filling in for Leo today. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles, and technology is my thing. This is what I like to talk about, and it's kind of a way of life for me. So this is why it's kind of fun to be here, because you guys like to hear about tech. I like to talk about tech. It all works out. You can learn more about me if you want on my website, richontech.tv. The website for this show, if you hear about something that you want more information on, or if I talk about an app or a website or anything, any type of solution, you don't need to write it down. You don't have to run for a pencil. Just go to techguylabs.com, and that's the website where you can find a very nicely organized sliced and diced kind of synopsis of everything that's mentioned on the show. It's very handy, actually. Even if you need help in the future on something, you know, you're like, hey, does this app do this? You just go there. It's pretty cool. So this week is going to be interesting for a lot of folks on the 20th, which is Thursday, right? I'm not talking the 21st, which is when the new iPhones launch. No, I'm talking the day before that happens, on the 20th. And this is going to be a nationwide test, okay? The first time they've ever done this, of the iPause. And no, it's not something to do with dogs. The iPause stands for Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. And this is done with FEMA and the FCC. So they're going to do two different tests. And you're probably familiar with one part of this test, which is when you're watching TV or listening to the radio and you hear that little break-in sound, right, that we've heard since childhood. And you hear that break-in sound. It's that very particular sound that they play. And then it says, this is a test of the emergency broadcasting system. And then they go on to explain that had this been real, that you would hear, you know, whatever they need to tell you at that time. We've heard that for a long time. But with the advent of cell phones, things are a little different nowadays. People don't always have their TVs on. They don't always have their radios on. Sometimes they're streaming. And this presents some complications when you're trying to tell the whole nation something at one time. So now we have a new system, which is called the WEA. Okay, WEA. So you've got the EAS and the WEA. So the EAS is emergency alert system, and that's really dealing with the radio and TV and all that stuff. But then the WEA is the wireless emergency alerts. And you've probably gotten one of these on your phone, right? If you've ever had an Amber Alert in your area, you might have received one of these messages on your phone. The first time you got one, it probably scared the heck out of you, like it did for me, because I've got 15 phones around the house and they all went off. So you sit there and you go, what was that? Now we're sort of used to them. And I feel like we've gotten more of them lately for the emergency alerts, for the Amber Alerts. And also there's one, I think it's called the Silver Alert, where it's like an elderly person that's gone missing. So on September 20th, there will be a WEA portion of this test, right? So there will be, first they're going to do the emergency the wireless emergency alert at 2:18 Eastern time. So if you're on the East Coast, it's going to be at 2:18. If you're on the West Coast, that's around, 11:18 a.m.? So around 11:18 or 11, 12, no. I'm really bad with this math. If it's 2:18, whatever it is, let's go East Coast time. So 2:18 East Coast time, okay? So if we go there at that time on your phone, there will be a text. And this is a warning system that provides the president with communications capability to address the entire nation during a national emergency. So again, like I said, this has all been available through the TV and radio, but now they're going to try it through the cell phones. And like I said, you got one of these before. So you're saying, well, what's new about this? I've already gotten an Amber Alert and I've disabled government alerts. I don't feel like getting any more. Well, this one you can't disable. And this is also the first time that they're testing this on a national level. So what they're going to do is, for 30 minutes, every cell tower in America is going to broadcast this WEA test message at 2:18 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, September 20th, 2018. And what this means is that any cell phone that is compatible, which is probably any cell phone made in the last couple of years, that's on, within range of an active cell phone tower, and whose wireless provider participates in WEA, which is probably all of them in America, it will receive a text message. And the text message will say, presidential alert, along with, this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. It's a big deal. So when you think about reaching everyone in America at once, we think this will work. We assume it will work. But there's a lot of caveats here with the system. Some phones might not be turned on. Some phones might be out of service. Some phones might be out of range. But in reality, this is potentially going to reach everyone in America all at once. That's a lot of people at one time. So be prepared. Thursday, September 20th, 2:18 p.m. Now, it says it's going to be a 30-minute test. So what does that mean? Well, that means that these cell towers, the way they ping the phones, they will send out that message for 30 minutes. So you may not get it at 2:18 exactly on the dot. You may have your phone in airplane mode and get off a plane, and then it pings it and gets it. And, you may not have your phone on at all. Now, you may be asking me, I got a couple of questions about, can you turn this off? No, you cannot. So if you go into the settings on your iPhone or Android, there is a section for emergency alerts. And if you look at that section, you can see that there are some options there, right? And if you look in those options, there are some options that you can turn off. But the reality is, this message from the president is not one of them. So you cannot turn this message off. You can turn off things like Amber Alerts, whatever, but this one is not disableable. So you will get it if your phone is compatible and it happens. So just be prepared for that. So what can they use this for in the future? Well, they can use it for dangerous weather, missing children, and other critical situations through alerts. So the national test is going to use that same sort of sound that you hear, the special tone and the special vibration that you've gotten before with tornado warnings and Amber Alerts, but it's going to have this special header that says presidential alert. And again, even if you've opted out of the tornado warnings or the Amber Alerts, you can't opt out of this one. So there you have it. If there's a problem, if there's kind of an issue, like if this, we just had this major hurricane, right? If that was going on during this test on Thursday, if they were having like a major issue, they're not going to do it on Thursday because too many people are preoccupied. So if there's a problem, the backup date is Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. So if there's any sort of issue that happens, any sort of natural disaster, whatever, on September 20th, Thursday, they will reschedule it to October 3rd. So just be prepared. My feeling is two things. Number one, will this still happen if your phone is on silent? So I got a question via my Twitter, at Rich DeMuro, if you want to check me out there. I got a question this morning. Someone said, hey, if my phone's on silent, will I still hear this thing? No, you won't hear it, but your phone should buzz. So it's going to kind of follow the directions of your phone. It's kind of like if your TV is off, the emergency alert would not turn on your TV to activate the alert, as far as I know. And the other thing is, I say watch out for scams because, you know, there could be some scam artists that pick up on this and send you this alert and say, hey, click here to verify your information or something. Don't click that link. Don't believe it. This thing will only say this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. Again, no action is needed. But be aware, this Thursday. RichOnTech.tv is my website. You're listening to Tech Guy, The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte on vacation. I'm in for Leo. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in today for Leo Laporte. We'll take your calls next at 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. Taking your calls at 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Richard is in L.A. Richard, I like your name.
I appreciate yours, too.
What's going on?
I've never been called Rich, though, at any time in my life.
You've never been called Rich?
No, Richie, when I was real young.
Oh, interesting.
In college, it was Dick, and now it's Richard.
Okay. My mom is the only one that calls me Richard now, mostly, or people when they're mad at me, but most of the time, it's Rich.
Well, that's true. Here's the story. I've been emailing a friend of mine using my Gmail account to her Yahoo emailer for literally years. All of a sudden, about 3 weeks ago, she wasn't seeing my email because I'd asked her, haven't you responded to it? Why haven't you responded to my email? She eventually found that my email from Gmail was going into her spam folder in Yahoo. Did she do that, or is that something, is that a quirk of the system?
It could be a quirk. I mean, it's funny because I actually have... that happens often. I mean, I have Gmail, and it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens. I mean, these spam filter things are not perfect, right? So I think that it's something that she might have marked one of your messages as spam by accident, right? And then that could have triggered it, and now every email that you send to her is going into spam. But I think there's a couple of easy ways to fix this. So has she tried to add you to her address book?
I've been in her address book for years.
Okay, so this is something that just recently happened new.
2 weeks ago.
Okay.
After years.
I think, and she's using Yahoo, you're using Gmail.
Yes.
Okay. I think what happened was, I think she marked one of your messages as spam by accident, right? So there's two things. She can go into her spam folder, find one of your messages, and see if there's a option there to mark it as not spam, right? So in Google and Gmail, I'm sure you know that if you go into your spam, and this works for any Gmail, you can go in and look at a spam message, and if it's coming from someone that's not spam, there's a little thing at the top, a little button that says, you know, not spam. And once you do that, like right now I'm looking at one from Dropbox, and at the top of my email here it says, why is this message in spam? It is similar to messages that were identified as spam in the past. And then I have the option of saying report not spam, and now miraculously all of my messages from Dropbox will not go to spam. Now on Yahoo, when she looks at that message that she has from you, if there's an option there to report as not spam, that's the first thing she should do. Second thing she can do is mark you as a safe sender. So if you go into filters, you can create a filter that contains your email address, and then it, you know, you basically make a filter that anytime she gets an email from your email address, she can have it moved to the inbox. And what happens on Gmail when I do this, because oddly, and this is super odd, but I get emails from the Google PR team, and for some reason, the Google PR team emails always go to my spam. And I don't know if that's some sort of inside joke with Gmail and Google. I don't know. But I literally, they'll be like, hey, you didn't see my email? I'm like, no, but now I have a filter set up. So any email that comes to me from google.com, it goes to my inbox. And it says at the top of it, it says, this email is not in spam because you said not to put it in spam. And so they're kind of like telling me that every time I get an email. So once she creates that filter, I think all of your emails will finally make their way to her inbox.
But right. Well, that it happens with Google to you is really amazing.
Isn't that really funny? And I've marked them as not spam, and I just don't understand it. And it literally happened for, you know, a couple of years until I finally created the filter and did away with that. But I would mark them as not spam, whatever I needed to do. Nothing worked until I made a filter that says anything from Google.com, you can put in my inbox. It'll be safe. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, these email programs are, you know, they can be interesting because there's a lot of artificial intelligence going on here. Because if you think about, if you've ever looked in your spam folder, there's a lot going on there. And these computer programs have to figure out in a split second whether they should route this message to the right place, where it needs to go, all that good stuff. And it's happening a lot of times with artificial intelligence, or almost all the time, rather. So you think that's going to
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you think it's going to work out, Richard?
I have to check with her. We'll do it. This Thursday business, I read somewhere, I think in USA Today, that there's going to be a fairly loud noise when they, in addition to the vibration.
Yes.
Is that in your system?
Yes.
Is that what you heard too?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. It's going to be the same noise, though, if you've ever gotten an Amber Alert. It's not the same noise as your text message. So that's very true, Richard. It's going to be a different noise. So no matter what your text messages come in as, this will not sound the same way. Or your notifications, right, whatever you have that set as, it will not sound that way. It will have a special sound that's reserved for these special alerts. So, and it is loud and it is jarring, and there will be a lot of tweets about this when it happens. Believe me, it's going to be, and hopefully it works out, right? Hopefully everything goes right and they don't do what Hawaii did and send out that message that said there was a missile headed their way, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
That's the danger of a system that is this big and reaching everyone all at once. There's a lot of potential for something to go wrong here. And I think that's why they're trying to get ahead of this and telling people what they're doing before they do it. Because, I mean, I don't know, Richard, I'm sure you remember War of the Worlds, right?
Oh, yes.
So I remember watching that in high school and just thinking, how could this ever happen? How could that ever happen? And sure enough, I think it could with today's technology, because even though we have Twitter and all this stuff, I mean, look at the proliferation of fake news. You know, people, you still have to fact check things that you see online because you still don't believe them half the time, you know?
You shouldn't. Probably.
You shouldn't, yeah.
Thanks very much, Rich.
Yeah, I'm a skeptic, so I generally fact check everything. Richard Nelle, thanks so much for calling in today on the show. If you have a question, the phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Something that's kind of fun that's going to happen tomorrow, by the way, is if you have an iPhone, man, there's a lot of alerts going on your phone, but tomorrow you might get an alert that there's a new version of iOS. So on Monday, September 17th, iOS 12 is scheduled to hit iPhones. So if you have one of the newer iPhones that can support iOS 12, there's going to be a whole bunch of new features and things that will come to your phone. Now, I know some people don't like to get this on the first day, but I'm just telling you, when you see that notification tomorrow, if you want to upgrade, Apple says it's actually going to make your phone faster if you have an older device, which is kind of cool. That's one of the first times they've ever said that with the brand new version of iOS, because generally we think about new versions of software slowing down our devices. You have a question, you want to talk about it, give me a call, 8888-ASK-LEO. You're listening to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in for Leo Laporte. More of your questions and answers next. I've been running iOS 12 as well, and it's fine. In fact, I already got the final version for some reason. I don't know why, maybe because I was running the beta, but I've got iOS 12, and according to this, it's the latest. I don't know what that means or what they... So Apple beta users got the Gold Master on Tuesday? I guess so. So does that mean I'm not going to get an update tomorrow? Or is this still... Because I don't see Siri shortcuts in here. Or maybe I'm missing them. Or maybe I don't know how to use them yet. But I don't see anything. I thought it was going to be an app for Siri shortcuts, unless they wouldn't have put it like in a folder, right? I don't think so. I can't. Yeah, if I search for it, I don't see it. What's that? Weird. My Facebook is stuck on loading now for like 2 days. Let's see. I usually wait till... Yeah, Siri shortcuts will be an app. So I must not have the final one then, because clearly if I don't have Siri shortcuts, this is not the final version. Because Siri shortcuts, unless it's delayed, is coming out tomorrow, right? Siri. Oh. Oh my gosh, here they are. It's not an app. It's right here. Oh, that's so cool. What? Look at all this. Oh, this is amazing. Okay, I just found it. It's under Siri. And so I get my shortcuts. I get to read all the latest headlines. Let's make a shortcut. Add to Siri. Oh my gosh, record your personalized phrase. This is amazing. Oh, Apple, you did it again. So cool. There it is. Oh, and it's giving... Oh, you guys could see. Oh, here on my... Here, take a look at everything here. So here it is. But the problem is it shows a lot of personal stuff. So I'm trying to... Let's see. I'll show you one. But this is... So read the... Here, there you go. Where am I? So read the latest headlines. So there it is. Add to Siri. And this is from Google News. So they must already have that in there, which is pretty cool. So you can look at the... So I can record my personalized phrase. So let me try it. Siri can use to tell Google News to run the shortcut. So let me try this. Ready? Tell me my latest headlines. Okay, now let's try this. Ready? So done. And let's see what happens. Ready? Tell me my latest headlines. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. But it doesn't really read them. It just goes to them. That is amazing. So if I can do... Oh, wow. So now, guys, before you call me a fanboy, come on. Look, I'm the guy that used to use Tasker back in the day on Android, okay? Believe me, I had my tasks very well built out on Tasker. So don't call me a fanboy because, you know, I can appreciate what Apple has done here because Tasker was amazing. But guess what? 99.9% of America never used it. Now that shortcuts are on here, you can set shortcuts. If I can do little shortcuts for things that I want Siri to do, that's amazing. So what else can I do on here? Let's see. So all shortcuts. So I can get... interesting. Okay, well, so anyway, that's amazing. I can't wait to try that out. It doesn't look like there's too many available just yet, but that's going to be awesome. Cool. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. TechGuyLabs.com is our website here at the show. If you hear something that you like, something that I mention, just go to the website and search for a keyword, and you can find all the notes on whatever we talked about here on the show. You might be wondering, who's this voice? Hold on. Well, I'm Rich DeMuro. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles, filling in for Leo Laporte today, who is on vacation. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website, richontech.tv. I also have a podcast, so if you want to subscribe to that in iTunes or Google or wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can just go to my website and press play. It all works. That's called Rich on Tech. So if you just search Rich on Tech in the podcasts app of your choice, you will find my daily, usually it's daily, I just talk about something that's interesting in the tech world. It's all my mission to help you guys get the most out of all of your fun gadgets. Let's go to, Joe in Austin, Texas. Joe, you have a question?
Yes, I do.
What's going on?
Well, last night I pulled the trigger on an iPhone X Max, I have an iPhone 6S, and I want to give that to somebody, and I bought the iPhone on the AT&T system, and I want to give my AT&T system 6 Plus to a friend that's on Verizon. Will that phone work on Verizon?
Good question. So you bought it on AT&T. Now, is it unlocked? Did you buy it through AT&T, or did you buy it through Apple?
I bought it through AT&T, so it's locked.
Okay, it's locked. Well, number one, you can go to AT&T's website and unlock it, okay? So right. AT&T, have you done that yet?
Yeah, you're talking about unlocking the old one.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet, but I guess I can do that, sure.
Yeah, so definitely do that. So att.com/device unlock. And once you have your phone for a certain amount of time or you've paid off a certain amount on it, whatever you've done, AT&T will help you unlock it. You don't even need to call them up. You can literally just do it from your device. or actually from this website, rather. I mean, just go. You can do it from your device on the web browser, but it's probably easier to do it from a desktop. And they basically ask you some information about your device, and next thing you know, within 24 hours, usually they send you an unlock code, as long as they make sure that everything's on the up and up, right? You've paid your bill, you've done everything right, you know, they like you as a person, you're a good human being. I don't know what their magic sauce is, but that whatever it is, they will send you that code. And I've done this several times with my AT&T phones, and it does work. Now, and then you go into that phone and you basically, I forget what you have to do to, I think it's just unlocked. Maybe you have to reset it, whatever you have to do, but it's unlocked.
Good now, enough.
In my experience, though, here's the caveat, Joe. I don't think that that phone will work on Verizon, because the way that AT&T is formulated with their phones, and you said this is a 6, you said?
6S Plus.
6S. So it really depends what bands are on this phone. Generally, when you unlock an AT&T phone, it will only work on T-Mobile and other GSM networks. That's just kind of like the general rule of thumb. Now, that doesn't mean in recent years, Apple has really been building phones that have all the networks in them. And what happens is when you get on a network on LTE, there's a bunch of bands that it operates on. And generally, Apple's been building all of these into their devices because it's just easier to have one phone that kind of works on everything, right?
Right.
But if you bought it through AT&T in the past, sometimes they have made specific versions of these devices that don't have the bands that work on Verizon. So here's what you can do. My advice is you can take your phone to a Verizon store and have them pop in a SIM card and test it and see if it works on the AT&T network, on the Verizon network.
Well, they will do that.
Yeah. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's good, and that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I would do that, because you can go online and you can actually search for this device. There's usually a little model number on your phone that will tell you kind of like some information. But to be honest, it's a lot of work, and it's too much to figure out. So I think if you just take it to Verizon, say, hey, can you pop in a test SIM and see if this phone works on your network? I unlocked it from AT&T. They might just say, no, it's not going to work. But say, well, can you just try it out and see? And I've done this before, because I brought a phone in that I had that was unlocked, and the guy did pop a SIM card in, and it sure enough worked, and he was surprised. And they might give you like a little runaround and say that, you know, it's not qualified for their network. But I think that they'll be able to tell you pretty quickly if you bring it in there. And the good thing is that you're a very nice friend for giving it to them. Are you charging them for this phone?
I haven't decided that yet.
Okay. You know, if you do decide to go that route, you know, come up with a fair price. Look at what these phones are going for on something. I usually go to gazelle.com and then I go to eBay, because eBay is going to be really expensive. Gazelle is going to be really cheap. So I go somewhere in the middle there and find a fair kind of amount to charge a friend, because you don't want them. You're not going to charge them the same amount as eBay, because eBay is going to take their cut, all the payment systems. So it's going to be less than that. But then Gazelle is lowballing you. So you want it to be a little bit more than that. You see what I mean?
So you use build off of the Gazelle.
Yeah, I kind of go between both of them. So if, let's say, Gazelle says it'll give you $50 for that phone, and let's say eBay says $350, go somewhere in the middle. And
gotcha.
You know, there you go.
So, great. Well, Rich, thanks a lot. I new voice on the Tech Guy. Great sound. Enjoy it.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. And I love Austin, so that's a fun city to live in.
Good enough. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a good one. All right. Let me just talk about something that's, something that happens on our computers that I really like to tell people about, and this is malware. Okay. So I did a segment on KTLA on TV the other day about malware, and this turned out to be one of the most popular segments I've done. So if you have a PC, a couple things, you know, it's running slow, it's sluggish, maybe you don't recognize your search engine, it's suddenly different. These are all symptoms of malware. And I'm going to tell you about a couple of ways that you can kind of keep malware off your computer and even scan your computer for some of this stuff. And I'll tell you about three things in particular that I find that work pretty well. The first one, and this is really applying mainly to Windows computers. There is malware for Mac computers, but it's just not as prevalent. It's not as much of a problem. But if you have a PC, it is a problem. And a lot of times the way this stuff gets on your computer is you mistakenly install it. And when you download a free program, a lot of times they sideload those programs with a piece of malware. And, you know, they don't call it malware. They call it a browser helper or a toolbar or a cleaning program. It's something that you don't necessarily need on your computer, but they like it on your computer because guess what? It's sending back a whole bunch of data about what you're doing on your computer to their servers, and that helps them make money. Or they might be popping up ads to you. serving up ads. If you're just on your computer and as soon as you open up your web browser, ads start popping up on your computer, that's a problem. That means you might have some malware. First extension, these are all for Chrome. Number one is the malware, well, they work for Chrome and some other ones, but this is called the Malwarebytes browser extension. So you might have heard of Malwarebytes. That's a big company that makes an app for your computer when it comes to malware. Well, this is now an extension for Chrome and Firefox that protects you as you surf. So it blocks visits to malicious websites, and it also makes it so scam artists can't hijack your browser or lock it up with a tech support scam. And that's really important because I hear about those so much. It also blocks third-party ad trackers to protect your privacy. So if you search for something on one website, every other website that has an ad won't try to sell you that. So that's kind of cool. Second one is called Windows Defender Browser Protection. And this is kind of like the Malwarebytes. It's an extension, an add-on. But what this one does is mainly protect you from malicious links that try to trick you into installing other bad software on your computer. So all the links that you click on when you're on your web browser are scanned in real time. And especially these links that want to steal your personal information, like your bank account or your password, you'll see a big red warning screen. And finally, the easiest way to scan for some of this malware is if you have the Chrome web browser built in or you're using that on your computer. And this is Google Chrome. If you have it, they actually have a built-in scanner for malware. So the way you find it is you go to your menu on Chrome, which is all the way in the upper right-hand corner. It looks like three little dots. And you click those, then you go to settings in that menu that comes up, and then you scroll all the way down to the bottom where it says advanced, and then you scroll all the way down again and look for something called reset and clean up. And then you click something called clean up computer, and it will start searching for harmful software on your computer and help you get rid of it. So there you have it, three ways. If you want links to those, you can find them on my site, richontech.tv. Rich DeMuro sitting in for Leo Laporte today. You're listening to The Tech Guy. We'll have more of your questions after this at 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Give me a call. All right. Yeah, as far as I know, Chrome allows them. Yeah, it can sometimes cause issues. I use uBlock Origin for ad blocking. So the other thing I'm waiting for iOS 12 tomorrow is Google Maps to launch on my phone for CarPlay, because that's really exciting. I love the look of Apple Maps, but I don't like the functionality of Apple Maps. So the fact that they are going to allow third-party map software on CarPlay is amazing to me. And again, I'm generally a guy who uses an Android phone. So again, I'm trying to get a lot of the Android features to the iPhone. Yeah, it's not going to be tomorrow. I know. I wish that Google Maps would launch tomorrow. But if Google Maps is, look, it took Google. I did a story on Waze coming Waze coming to Android Auto. I did a story on that. I think it was almost 18 months after when it came, and they showed me a beta. I mean, it was insane. And anyway, so if that's any indication of how long they're going to take to bring Google Maps to CarPlay, I don't have high hopes for how long. But who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us tomorrow. If I was Google, I would want to be there. I mean, think about it. Waze to Android Auto is not that, I mean, it's big, but it's not, I don't think a lot of people use Android Auto. But if you think about the iPhone and the installation base, I think it's going to be pretty huge. So for Google to get there is going to be huge. But I'm wondering how it's handicapped. That's my big question, is how is iOS going to handicap Google Maps? I know there's something that's weird about it. Maybe it's the voice or whatever it is. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll be proved wrong. I hope not. All right. I hope I am. But yeah, let's see here. I'm still looking at. Yeah, so far I don't really have. Wow, that is amazing. So far there's not. Okay, so let's see. So what does it say? So the new CarPlay APIs let apps draw their own map tiles overlaid with CarPlay standard interface. It's a good compromise. So Google Map info and data, but interface is CarPlay. That's pretty standard, though. I mean, the CarPlay interface has to be everything, right? It has to be very, very simple. And it's funny because I asked Apple straight up a couple of years ago. I was like, okay, so who is it? Is Google keeping Google Maps off CarPlay, or is CarPlay keeping Google Maps off CarPlay. And Apple told me that they said that, well, once they're able to build it in a way that's approved by CarPlay in their format, it will be on there, whatever that meant. On Twitter, Waze has promised CarPlay rollout within a few weeks. Wow, that's amazing. I hope so. I'm just curious how it's going to work. I'm just curious how it's going to work with voice, because are you going to be able to use voice to navigate somewhere with Google Maps? I don't know. We'll just have to see. What's going on? Welcome back to The Tech Guy, the radio show where we talk about your technology, your gadgets, whatever you have going on in your life when it comes to tech. If you have a question, you can call me. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Phone lines are open. Rich DeMuro in today for the vacationing Leo Laporte. Do my best to answer your calls and questions and help you get on with life. SpaceX is Elon Musk's company that is not Tesla, and they said they have signed the first private moon traveler. First private moon traveler. And they're going to reveal who it is this week and when that flight to the moon is going to be. They're going to announce it Monday, actually, at the company's headquarters in Hawthorne, California. And the original plan called for two passengers, which, you know, they're going to pay big time for this, to fly around the moon using a Falcon Heavy rocket and a Dragon crew capsule. But the new strategy is to fly around the moon, but use an even bigger SpaceX rocket, which is still in development, that has its own dedicated passenger ship. And it sounds like there will only be one person aboard. So I don't know. I think it would have been more fun to go to the moon with someone else, right? Wouldn't it be more fun to experience the moon with a companion? So by yourself, I mean, clearly they'll have some, maybe some help, I guess, with other people on board. I don't know. But would you do this? Would you go to the moon? I don't know. I love to fly. I love to fly. But I'll be honest, I don't know if I would be willing to take a rocket into space and go into the moon. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a bumpy takeoff in the airplane where the captain comes on and he's like, yeah, everything is going to be smooth, but there might be a few bumps on the takeoff. And you're just like, oh God, bracing myself for these little tiny bumps. That's enough for me. But imagine what it feels like when you've got tens of thousands of pounds of rocket fuel strapped onto this rocket that you're sitting in a little pod in to go to the moon. Never mind how long it takes. How long does it take to get to the moon? This is all a teaser because the rocket has not been built, so presumably this is all a few years off. But Musk, obviously, his ultimate goal is to colonize Mars. This is a flyby, by the way. They're not landing, so you do not get to pick up a little space rock or a little souvenir from the moon. I wonder if you could take your iPhone. Could you take your phone and take some pictures? I assume. Can you imagine showing your friends the pictures on your iPhone or your camera roll from your trip to the moon? I mean, that is just amazing. This will be the first passenger on lunar, first passenger mission for SpaceX. They said they're implying that there's going to be more. So this would be humanity's first lunar visit since 1972. 24 astronauts back then flew to the moon from 1968 to 1972. Only 12 of them actually got out and walked on the moon. And next July is going to be the 50th anniversary of the first manned moon landing by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Oh, I was thinking Buzz Lightyear. See, I have too many kids watching Toy Story. When I think Buzz now, it's like Buzz Lightyear, which could go to the moon, right? I guess it's all the same. I guess that's why he was inspired by that. So would you go to the moon? Give me a call. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let me know. Would you be able to do that? Would you be up for the challenge? Would you get frequent flyer miles? I hope that SpaceX has a deal with like one of the airlines so I can pick up some miles if I did go to the moon. You'd have like platinum forever. Someone in the chat room saying if you lose your phone, it will be a big bother, like as if your home loses internet, because you won't have, well, you definitely would not have any internet on the way to the moon. So, but I wonder if it would work, you know, with all the no gravity and stuff. I guess it would work. Why not, right? Anyway, I think that's fascinating to me. Whoever's getting to do that is obviously very adventurous, very wealthy. I wonder how much that trip is costing them. All right. Let's go to, let's see here. What do we have here? Daniel. Daniel, you're on with Rich. Daniel, where are you calling from?
Yeah, yes, Ukiah, California.
Would you take the mission to the moon?
I might.
You might.
If I had the money.
No, what if they just said you can go?
Oh, yeah, I would go.
Yeah? Oh, wow. You're very adventurous. Very adventurous. All right, adventurous Daniel, what's on your mind?
Yes, yesterday I tried to turn on my computer and the screen wouldn't go. It was completely dead. It didn't go on. But my laptop is a laptop.
Oh, the laptop. Ouch. Uh-oh. So tell me what kind of laptop this is.
It's an HP. Do you think that the memory went bad?
Well, I don't think it would be the memory. It'd probably be something like the board inside the computer. Did you hear any sound associated with this?
Yeah, it turns on, but there's no screen. Doesn't go on at all. I mean, you think the hard drive might be bad?
Okay. Oh, the screen. Okay, so that you hear the computer come to life, but the screen remains black.
Right.
Okay. So when you do that, so you is your computer plugged in?
Yes.
Okay, it's plugged in. You turn it on just like you have every other time. What happens if you hold the power button down for a long time until your computer goes fully off? Have you tried that?
I have tried that. It doesn't work.
Did it go off? Did your computer go off?
Yes, it goes off. Yes.
Okay, so you hear everything kind of spin down.
Yes.
Okay, so once that happens, you press it again, and what happens?
It turns on again.
Okay, so you see the lights come on, but what happens to the screen?
It continues black, yes.
And there's nothing, nothing written on the screen at all. No flash, no nothing that says, like, you know, any kind of, like, data, nothing. Like, it just remains black.
No, nothing, no.
Okay. Well, I think something happened with your screen that's either, you know, some portion of the board went bad, the display card in there, whatever it is, or the screen connection itself. How old is this computer?
It's about 7 or 8 years old.
Oh, wow. Well, kudos to you for having a computer last that long. That's pretty amazing. That's a good good laptop. Did you have this thing out and about, or was it in one place the whole time?
Oh no, I've taken it back and forth. Yeah,
okay.
One place in there, yes.
Yeah, I think that I think it just went bad. I think the LCD, the screen, something is wrong on it. Now, here's the thing: you can try repairing this. Can you crack it open and do it yourself, or no? Are you a DIY? Are you that adventurous?
No, not really.
Yeah.
This one is a hard one to open.
Yeah, I think that this is probably something that's better left up to the professionals. I think that probably going to have to take it in for a repair somewhere. But if I were you personally, just to test it to make sure the computer's working before I even go through all that, I assume there's no HDMI connection on this computer.
Okay.
Is there? Is there a place where you can hook up like a TV to it? I don't think so. 7 years ago, they probably didn't do that, right?
No, it does have a HDMI connection port on.
Oh, yeah. It does. Okay. Well, if it has an HDMI port, grab an HDMI cable, connect this thing to your TV, and see if you can use it through your TV. And that will tell you if the computer insides are okay. And if that's okay, and you still want to continue on this path of getting this thing repaired, you're probably going to have to go get it repaired. Personally, Daniel, I don't think it's worth it. It's a 7-year-old computer. I think what you mainly want to do is hook it up to your TV, grab an external hard drive if you can get everything to display on the TV, and grab all your information off that computer, make sure it's backed up, and then I would just go out, and you're probably going to have to get a new computer at this point. But that's my recommendation. 7 years old is probably going to cost you more to replace that screen than it would to buy a new computer. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in today for Leo Laporte. TechGuyLabs.com is our website. We'll take more of your calls in a little bit at 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO. So excited for my new Siri shortcuts. Now I forgot what I said it though. See, that's the problem with the Siri shortcut though. Now you have to remember the syntax of what you said you want to say. And to me, the whole point of voice is that you shouldn't have to remember that, right? So now I don't remember. What did I assign to Google News? Was it tell me the headlines? No, see? That wasn't it. See, this is the problem. This is what I don't like. Oh, now I've got news playing. Yeah, see, this is the thing. It's like the Siri shortcuts are great, but you have to remember every single shortcut that you assign. And to me, what I like about Google is that you don't have to remember, like, you can say things on Google a million different ways and it still works. So that to me is kind of like a better system. Well, I agree, but not. I feel like with Google Home, I really don't have to remember. I mean, you have to remember the device name. Like with my Chromecast I have connected to my living room TV. I'm like, play Netflix on the living room TV. But I've noticed that I think Google Home really lets you say a wide range of things. Like I could say, turn the lights to orange, and it'll turn all the lights, you know? Whereas with Alexa, I remember I had to be like, turn lights orange in bedroom 2, you know? So I don't know. I think that the next level of these devices are going to understand what we're trying to tell them without saying things specifically. You know, if you're just standing in the room, it should be like, hey, turn these lights off. You know what I mean? And it should know that you're in that room and turn those lights off. So I think that's what they're working on. That's the goal, but who knows?
You're live.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about computers, mobile phones, gadgets, and more. Plus, we're taking your calls. So if you need help with your technology, or maybe you need some advice, give me a call. The phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. My name is Rich DeMuro. That's right, not Leo Laporte. I'm filling in for Leo today. He's on vacation. And some of you might know that I'm the tech reporter at KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles. I do a tech segment there. I cover technology. And I also have my report syndicated out to a bunch of different TV stations at various places in America, including New York, Chicago. Let's see, where else are we? Cleveland, New Orleans, Salt Lake City, Indianapolis, all over the place. So that's a lot of fun. I basically stand in one place every day and present my report to a bunch of different TV stations. And it's all consumer technology. A lot of the stuff that you guys are asking me about on this show is kind of the stuff that we cover in the tech segment. I did also write a book recently. It's called 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. So I released that earlier this year. A lot of good reviews on Amazon. So it's available for the Kindle and as an ebook. If you want to check that out, you can find it at my website, richontech.tv. That was a lot of fun because the iPhone does not come with a user manual, right? And so I noticed I kept getting questions over and over and over through email about people just wanting to know kind of basic things on the iPhone. And there's a lot of features on there that are just kind of hidden. And so I figured, why not just write a book of all the tips that I think people should know about? And it's not like a user guide. It's not like, you know, you need to read it from front to back. But my idea behind it was just to kind of tell you the things that this phone is capable of. And in the hopes that maybe when you need one of those features, you'll remember, oh yeah, Rich wrote about that in his book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone, available on Amazon. And yes, I will need to revise it just a little bit for iOS 12, which is going to come out with some new features. And already I've been playing with that on my phone. It's pretty cool, but it's not like a huge change. It's not like when we saw iOS, you know, 10 or 11 or whatever one had some big, big changes. iOS 12 is a lot of the same, but they have added some new things as well. So I will update the book as necessary, but a lot of it still applies. I mean, I kind of went through and it's all pretty good still. And by the way, the new version of iOS is going to be available tomorrow, which is September 17th, Monday, depending on when you're listening to this, if you listen on the podcast or whatever. So just beware that there will be an update. I know some of you don't like to update your phone because you don't want to deal with any changes. And I understand that. But personally, I'm the guy who wants the update before everyone else because I love change and I love new features. Another thing I love is Netflix. And I know a lot of you guys like that. And I was doing some research on a segment I did for TV about Netflix. And I came upon a couple of these things that I don't know if you remember last year or so, there's this big article. I actually wrote one of them that went viral. and it was all about these secret categories that Netflix has. They're not really secret, but Netflix slices and dices all the information about their movies into a lot of different ways. So if you go onto Netflix, you see a lot of everything is sort of recommended for you, right? It's all highly personalized. I personally don't like that. I like to just, if I had my way, when I was surfing through Netflix on my home screen, I would like to see, here are the top 100 movies on Netflix right now, right? And I get it. Not all those movies are going to be specific to me. Like, some of them may not resonate, but I'm still curious what everyone's watching, right? And they do that in certain ways, but it's not really very straightforward. Then they have all these different categories, you know, romantic comedies, action movies, movies with a strong female lead, because my wife and I share an account, so it might show me that. But the reality is, I want to see these movies in various categories, right? And some of these secret categories that, you know, these little extensions and websites can reveal can kind of help you narrow down into, you know, 80s comedies or movies appropriate for kids 2 to 4. So I'm going to tell you about a couple of these little extensions I found that I thought were pretty interesting and useful. And keep in mind, these are all for Chrome. They don't really affect the way that Netflix works on your TV, but you can, what I think is that you can use these extensions on Chrome to kind of find movies that you want to watch, add them to your list. It'll help you research better. And then once you go on your TV, you can just look in your list, and next thing you know, you can find. That's my thing right now. Because I'm paying $14 a month for Netflix, I pay for that, you know, the Ultra HD plan that gives you also downloads on like a bunch of devices. I want to watch only Netflix at this point, because I don't want to pay $6 to rent a movie on iTunes when I'm paying $14 for the whole month for unlimited movies. And I get it. It limits me in what I can watch, but I'm fine with that. I'd rather just sit down on a Friday night and watch something that's included in what I'm already paying, right? And so to me, like, I want to make the most out of all the things that are available to me on Netflix. And these extensions will help you do that. The first one is called Better Browse for Netflix. So Better Browse for Netflix adds a little browse all menu to your Netflix homepage. And this lets you explore all the so-called secret categories on Netflix. So if you install this, now you have this thing called Browse All. And you can scroll down this list, and man, does it get very specific. Action anime, anime comedies, anime dramas, classic TV shows, classic war movies, films based on a book, martial arts movies, monster movies, like I said earlier, movies for kids age 2 to 4, or they also have various other age ranges. And I love this, because what is the worst thing about Netflix? It's sitting down to your TV on a Friday night and now searching for something to watch. To me, that is absolutely not the right time to do it, but that's what 99% of us do, because we don't have time during the week and we don't feel like it and we don't want to deal with it. So at the end of your day, when you're trying to be the most relaxed, this is when we're presented with this daunting task of navigating an on-screen menu to try to figure out of the thousands of things to watch on Netflix, which one might suit us that evening. So by using something like Better Browse, you can browse on your computer, you know, maybe take a couple minutes out of work, no one's going to know. Browse Netflix, browse the categories that you're interested in, search through these categories and find something interesting and add it to your list. So that's number one, Better Browse for Netflix. That's available for Chrome. The second one is called Rateflix. Rateflix is really interesting because it adds ratings to the listings on Netflix. And this is something I never really understood. Why is Netflix so scared of ratings, right? Well, probably because some of the movies on there are kind of junky, and they don't want you to know that they get a 5 on IMDb or a 32% on Rotten Tomatoes, right? So this little extension called Rateflix puts ratings on the listings. So when you're scanning the listings, you can see how a movie rated on all kinds of third-party sites, including Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb, and Metacritic. So those ratings are shown. They can help you understand how these movies are rated. And look, ratings aren't everything, but it's nice to have a little bit of perspective when you're looking at some of these movies on Netflix, especially ones that you might not know about. And you might not recognize the titles, but if you see they get a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, maybe I'll look at that. The ratings are also shown on the play bar of the movie that you're watching if you're watching it on your computer. Again, these extensions are for Chrome, so you're only going to see them show up on your computer screen. So you're not going to see them change the way that Netflix acts on your TV, your smart TV, or your Apple TV, whatever. This one is kind of interesting. It's called Super Netflix, and this one lets you control every aspect of watching video on Netflix, at least, again, when you're watching on your browser. You can change the speed of the videos that you're watching, so you can go from 0.5, which is half speed, to four times faster. Now, I don't know who wants to watch a movie really fast like this, but I guess some people would, because maybe it would be really fun and you're trying to learn a foreign language you want to hear as much as possible, but I don't really understand that. But maybe it's a slow movie. Maybe you're watching a romantic comedy and it's really slow and you want to just speed it up a little bit. You can get through that faster. You can also change the streaming quality. You can also blur out images and episode descriptions, so there's no spoilers on there as you browse. And you can even change a setting so show intros are always skipped. So again, that one's called Super Netflix. If you want links to these things, you can go to my website, richontech.tv. TechGuyLabs.com is where we put all the stuff from the show as well. You're listening to the Tech Guy radio show. Rich DeMuro in today for Leo Laporte. I'll take more of your calls next at 888-ASK-LEO. 1-888-827-5536. We'll talk some more tech after this. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, in for Leo Laporte. Phone lines are open. We're talking tech at 888-ASK-LEO. 1-888-827-5536. Brian is in Lakewood, California. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's going on?
I got a program, and it's a repair program that requires, you can actually, it has the setup files on a CD. Well, the CD has to be in the computer to run the program. And I was just wondering how to get, now I've already copied the files to the hard drive, but how do I get that program to recognize that those files are not in the CD, that they're actually on the hard drive now?
Okay, so okay. What program is this, number one?
A repair program, truck repair program.
A repair program for what is it repairing?
Automobiles.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay, so it's like a specialty application that you have installed on your computer, but it's supposed to be running off a CD?
You can open up the program, but all the CAD files are still on the CD, but I've copied all those files to the hard drive, but I'm not able to get the program to recognize that they're on the hard drive now. It always keeps looking for them in the CD drive.
Right, because the way the program is probably coded is that it's hard-coded to look for the CD because they didn't expect someone to copy it to the drive like that. So can you install this? Can you install this program or no? Does it have to be run off the CD? Because maybe these CAD files are so big.
Yeah, it actually initially is installed.
Oh, it is initially installed.
Yeah, you initially is set, but you cannot. Now, you can open the file up, but you can't go any further until you put the CD back into the drive. And so if I'm using the computer, say without a CD, I won't be able to use that.
Right.
That player, I can't use that file anymore. I mean, that particular program anymore.
I think
it's an old program. It's from 06.
Right. I think it's a security program. I think it's a security portion of the program, right? Like, I think that the program, there's two things that could be going on here. Number one, it's an older program and it just may not work the way it should on today's computers, right? That could be number one. They didn't expect you to run this thing without a CD, right? That could be number one. And they just programmed it where they said, okay, anyone who's going to run this program is going to have the CD in the drive, right?
Yeah, right.
Number two, if you copied everything over and it's still trying to access the drive, it could be that the program is just hard-coded to think that way. You know, it needs to access these giant files on the drive, and even though you've transferred them to your hard drive, it's still looking for them on the CD drive because that's where it expects to find them. And that's, there may not be an option in the program to say, hey, by the way, I copied all these to the hard drive, because when this program came out in 06, the developers might have thought, well, nobody's ever going to copy over, you know, 20 gigs of files to the hard drive, because that's just too big, right? So
and it could have been their thinking. Yes.
I think there's, are you on a Windows computer? Is that what this is?
Yes, I'm on a Windows computer.
And when you install the program, does it say, like, hey, be sure to keep the CD in the drive to run the program?
No, it's just been the way it's been. That the CD, it just has, it's looking for the cap files on the CD. I'm assuming that's the files they're looking for.
Right, right. And when was the last time you installed this program on your computer?
Oh, I just purchased a new computer, and actually was on Friday.
Oh, okay. So you just recently did this. Okay.
Well, on the new computer.
And this is a Windows computer, you said?
It's a Windows computer, okay. Yes.
All right, so I had something similar the other day where I had I got a CD with a thing that I was installing, and of course my computer does not have a CD drive, my Windows computer, it's a laptop, and so I actually made a image of the CD and copied that entire image over to my hard drive and then ran it like it was the CD off my hard drive. I think that's going to be your best bet. So you're going to need to make an image of this CD on your Windows computer. So you said this is a new computer?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So if you have, you know, the latest version of Windows, you're going to have to use the utility inside Windows to make what they call an ISO, which is, it's kind of an image of the entire CD drive, right? So it kind of takes, if you think about a mirror, just imagine a mirror image of that CD. It copies it start to finish from the CD onto your hard drive as if that is still running off the CD. And then I think if you install the program off of that and use that, it may work. Now, I can't guarantee that it would work. So is there a way that you can call this company and ask them, is this company still in existence?
It may be, because now, you know, we still have trucks all the way up, but most of their stuff now is web-based, so it's not an issue. This particular one is still on the CD, and they haven't really put that particular one on. It's not a web-based for that particular, for those particular years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of those still in our fleet, the older versions.
So the company that makes it, they still are around. I think you got to call them and just say, like, hey, you know, I've got this program. Is there a way that I can get this thing all digital, or you can, you know, can I move these CAD files, or do I just have to run this thing with this CD in there? It sounds to me like this program was made for copy protection, because this is probably an expensive program.
Well, no, we get them because we have a fleet,
right?
So it's free to us.
Mm. Yeah, I think that the program was written a certain way where it wants to access these files in this way. So I think your best bet is maybe contact them. See, if you don't want to deal with the whole coming up with an image of the disk, which is kind of complicated, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. But the other thing you could do in the meantime is just take that disk, copy everything from the disk, like literally do select all the files, open up the disk in Windows Explorer, take all the files and just drag them into a folder on your desktop, and then try running the program from there by clicking the install and seeing what happens that way, and seeing if it figures out, because you're installing it from the hard drive, if it will actually run from the hard drive. That's going to be your best bet, and contact the company and see if this is even an option. I think it sounds like it's some sort of copy protection that's built into the program, if you ask me. That's my best guess, because this is a fleet thing. It's CAD files. It sounds like it's very specialized, and they don't want people just literally copying the contents of that disk, putting it on the internet, and letting anyone download that so that they can run the program, which is the risk they run if they let people do that. And that's why I think the program is coded so that it wants to run off the CD-ROM drive. All right, good question, Brian. I know that's a tough one. Probably not the answer you wanted, though. Rich DeMuro here in for Leo Laporte. You're listening to The Tech Guy. We're going to have more of your questions and talk tech after this. The phone number, if you want to jump in, 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Welcome back to The Tech Guy Radio Show. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in for Leo Laporte. We're talking about technology. Give me a call. 1-888-ASK-LEO. 1-888-827-5536. Jim is calling from Roseburg, Oregon. Jim, what's going on? Welcome to the show.
Hi. Let me put on my radio voice. I'm sitting here with a nice new Samsung S9 Plus that I love.
Great choice.
And when I got rid of the old one, I magically managed to erase the context.
Oh, no. Context. How did that happen?
Well, I was selling the old one, but I foolishly left it connected to the Wi-Fi in the house, and you know what happened to my contacts?
They got wiped.
They're gone. They're gone, yeah. So I have a lot of contacts that were originally transferred onto this phone, but some of them disappeared. And now I have managed to download the contacts from an even older phone that had all those old guys that I really wanted. And I'm a little concerned about this file, just adding it on to the new phone. I have a file that says contacts from my previous Samsung Galaxy Prime, which should be compatible completely. But if I load the new one on, will I then wipe the stuff I've added since?
No, but how are you going to load it on? How are you doing that? What's your plan?
USB cable.
Okay.
USB cable.
I wouldn't do that. Here's what I would do.
Okay.
So you've got these contacts on the old Galaxy. What did you say it was called?
Grand Prime.
Grand Prime.
Metro phone.
So this was an Android device, right?
It is Android. Okay. Samsung Galaxy, but it's a Metro.
And have you gone to contacts?
To Sprint.
Have you gone to contacts.google.com?
No.
Okay. So I have a feeling all your contacts are in there. It depends where your contacts were on your Samsung, if they were in the Samsung.
The old ones are not.
The old ones are not. Okay.
Nope.
So a couple things you can do. I think that you want to go to contacts.google.com because if you have an Android phone, most of the time your contacts are being saved to Google Contacts, right? Now, on an Android right. That's with Samsung, it could be also saved to the Samsung cloud. It could be saved in a lot of different places. But first, I want you to go to contacts.google.com to see if your contacts are there at all. So you're on there on your computer?
Many of them are there, but a lot of phone numbers are missing.
Okay, perfect. So now what I would do from here is this is where you want to import your the contacts list that you have. This is where you want to import it. Yeah. Right?
Okay.
So if you look on the settings, there should be a section that says, import your contacts. So if you look under on the left-hand side, there's a menu. It says, frequently contacted.
Menu and import. I don't see it, but that's okay.
It's under more. So it's like kind of nestled under some other. It's not under the settings, which is odd. It's under
more. Import.
Yep.
Okay. I see. And then
choose your file.
It wants to know what provider.
Yep. So I would assume
it wants to know if I want email, Outlook, other email providers, CVS or vCard. And I would assume it will recognize this as a vCard that's saved. Actually, it's on my desktop.
Yeah. Okay. So once you get that in there, it should import them in there and kind of match up the contacts. Now, it might make duplicates, but you should get at the top of your screen, hey, yes. We found a bunch of duplicates. Can we merge these? And I would say yes.
Duplicates are fine.
Yeah,
you know.
Duplicates are fine, but it will help you merge that data. But here's the thing. So once this is done, now you should go onto your Android phone, and they should show up automatically as long as everything's turned on with sync. But in the future... In the future, you just need to know where your contacts are being stored, whether it's Google Contacts or whether it's Samsung. And the other thing you need to know is that if you do, and this works for anyone that has a Google Android phone, if you have contacts and you kind of wipe them out, there's actually a setting that they put in here a couple of years ago, or maybe last year, I don't remember, but they kind of keep a backup of your changes. So I'm clicking undo changes and it says change your contacts list to go back to any state in the past 30 days. So long as it's been 30 days, should be fine.
While we're talking, I just did it.
Okay.
And we're back.
So it's back?
We are back.
Look at that, Jim. Yes. I love it.
What a guy.
I love hearing that.
I'm an old guy. My first computer, they never let me see it. It was in another room at UC Berkeley in the math department.
Wow.
So I've been around a little while. We would just hand our punch card to the sysop, and he'd band us back a printout in two or three days. And That was a computer.
That's amazing. Those were the days, huh?
I've come a little way.
Yeah, you have. Well, I'm glad we got your contacts rescued, so thank you.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right, Jim. Thanks for calling into the show. I appreciate it. Have a great day. So there you have it. So contacts is always a tricky thing because it's funny because I don't think that a lot of people even realize that Google is kind of storing their old contacts and that Google is keeping track of this stuff for you. And some of this stuff is because Google engineers, they're almost like protecting us from ourselves, right? Because that's kind of the reality of where we are with tech nowadays is that most people using them, I mean, look at this guy who we just talked to. He worked on some of the first mainframe computers, and he's having a problem with such a simple thing as contacts. But the reality is that's happening everywhere in America. It's happening all across the world. Most people just don't want to deal with this stuff because it's too complicated, because it's not straightforward. There's no instruction book. And, you know, the reality is these tech companies are trying to figure out ways of making it easier in the background so that when something like this happens, you can turn back the clock and say, oh, I just deleted all my contacts. Oh, my gosh. Okay, go into Google, calm down, and then turn them all back. Let's go to Ben in Bakersfield. Ben, you're on with Rich.
Hey, Rich. I love your segment on KTLA.
Oh, thank you.
But here's my question. So I used to use Plex to stream video from my computer to my Fire TV, and Plex has just gotten worse and worse with every update. So is there a cheap, effective, like, standalone, I guess, hard drive or video or something that I could store the video on that I could then stream that to my Fire TV?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's so many, right? I mean, isn't there, like... I mean, can't you just turn any hard drive, like any Western Digital hard drive that has Wi-Fi, can't you just turn that into like a Wi-Fi kind of drive that your Fire TV will pull off of?
Well, that's the thing. I'm looking for something where I don't spend $500-$600 on just a standalone thing that I can just connect to my network, and then I can tell Fire TV, hey, here it is. Go ahead and play this video off of here.
What about just plugging it into your Fire TV? Can't you do that?
I don't have an external hard drive for that. All my hard drives are inside my computer.
Well, okay, so you don't want to spend anything.
Well, no, I don't mind spending like $100-$200. I just don't want to have to, you know, what's it called? I want something that's going to work because Fire TV is a little...
Yeah, it's a little...
When it comes to certain video files.
Well, not if you have VLC on there. Do you have VLC installed?
Yeah, I do have VLC installed.
That pretty much plays like almost anything, I feel like. I think that you just grab an external hard drive and add it to the Fire TV. I think that's yeah.
Okay.
I mean, just grab one of those. You can get one for like $50, $60, and then you use VLC to access the files on that drive. And the only thing is, when it comes to adding files to that drive, you're gonna have to disconnect it to put it, you know, to put the files on there, the new files.
The other question I have, though, is that if I can go ahead and get into the hard drive, but I do have two Fire TVs, one in the living room, one in the bedroom.
Okay.
So that's why I was looking for something that's like wireless, like plug in my router and be like, here's all the files.
Yeah. Well,
your TV can access it.
If you want to do that, I think really you're going to have to look into a solution like a Synology drive or some sort of network attached storage or a hard drive with Wi-Fi. Ben, I think that's going to be your best bet. You're listening to The Tech Guy. More of your calls after this. Yeah, the thing about that is, I mean, if he wants to do two, the one is fine. You just put a hard drive, you know, just plug it into the back of your Fire. But if you're looking at trying to network it among two, you have to go with a network drive. That's the only way you're going to be able to do it. That's the way I do it in my house. I've got the Synology, and it works great. I don't really do it. I mean, I don't really. To me, like, I'm just streaming everything now. I used to do that whole thing where I wanted to have, like, you know. I wanted to have like a whole bunch of stuff like on my drive, and now I'm like, I don't really need it. So VLC is, oh, there you go. Oh, that's a good one. T-Mark, oh, that's a great solution. Some routers have USB and SMB support. Oh, that was a good one. If you're still listening, Ben, I believe, try that. Oh, that was a good one. Wish you would have said that. You could plug a hard drive into your router. And then that'll make it a NAS drive. That's a good one. Ooh, I like that. VLC, by the way, is just a app that literally... VLC, like, literally just plays any video file you throw at it. So it's pretty good. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, in for Leo Laporte today. It's been my pleasure to hang out with you today and talk tech. Let's just go right to the phone lines. Brian in Lancaster, you're on with Rich.
Hey, Rich, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I got an iPhone 7, 256 gigs.
Nice. How much of that have you filled up so far?
Oh, I don't know. Not very much.
Okay.
More than I thought, but not very much. Anyway, I've got a Bluetooth headset, wireless, and I've got a Bluetooth speaker. And my problem is when I'm listening to music or whatever on my Bluetooth, and I get a text or a notification on an app or whatever, it returns the volume down to a really low default volume, apparently.
What do you mean?
Well, like I'll turn my example. I'll turn my my Bluetooth speaker all the way up.
Uh huh.
Listening to music from my phone.
Sure.
And should I get a text message notification or another app notification?
Yeah.
It automatically sends the volume really low.
Well, during that notification, right?
Well, no. It stays there until I physically turn the volume back up.
Hmm. I mean, because on mine, it's whenever I have a notification come through, it'll bring down the volume, but then it goes back up to the level it was at. And it's always weird because it kind of, you know, if I'm wearing headphones, especially, I can hear it, you know, like it'll dip down or whatever. But I didn't think it stays at that level.
Yeah, on mine, it does. It just, until I manually turn the volume back up.
So basically, any text that you get is kind of killing the volume on your music that you're listening to.
Exactly.
That's kind of weird. That should not be happening.
It doesn't stop it. It just lowers the volume to a very low level, and it seems like a default thing because it does it with either the speaker or the headset. And I thought it was just the headset at the beginning, and then when I got my Bluetooth speaker, it does the same thing with that.
I'm wondering if there's something in accessibility that has have you gone in and changed anything in accessibility by any chance?
No, I haven't, and I've checked all my volumes and my notifications and all that, and I'm not really tech savvy. I mean, iPhones to me are still kind of I'm still learning the whole process with iPhones, so, you know, I mean, I'm not a guru at it, but by any means, but.
Yeah, I think that it would have to do something. I wonder if like there's something called call audio routing. I wonder if that could be it. I have mine set to automatic. Yeah, that's really weird because I definitely listen to a lot of you know, music on like a Bluetooth head or a Bluetooth speaker, and I definitely know what you're talking about where it dips the volume to do the chime of the notification, but it doesn't. It still brings it back to the normal level. What app are you using to play this music?
Spotify.
Okay, so it's Spotify. Interesting. I really don't know. I don't think that's supposed to happen. It could be the speaker that you have. Is this happening on all kinds of Bluetooth speakers or just the one?
Well, just the Bluetooth speaker and also my Bluetooth wireless headset.
Your headset, huh? So it's definitely a Bluetooth thing. And I'm wondering if you go into Bluetooth and let's say we look in the settings. So sometimes when you go into the settings of your Bluetooth, there's a little I next to it. And there's like little more settings that you can set if you tap the I. But I don't think that's the case because I'm looking at this. Does the speaker that you're using have any sort of associated app with it?
No.
Hmm. Okay. The only other thing I would say is you can maybe go into your sounds and haptics and just do a test where you turn off the text, like, you know, turn off the text notification and see if that does it. See if it still triggers it. And if that still triggers, you know, if it's still making your audio go low, then perhaps, I don't know, it sounds like you might need to do a restart or a refresh or something. I don't know. It's a really odd thing to have happen because it's not supposed to work like that. So it could be something that is interacting here that's just being a little weird. I know it's not the answer you want. And I'm looking for anyone in the chat room to kind of help out and see, but everyone's agreeing that it's kind of not the way the iPhone is supposed to handle this stuff. Because imagine, you know, that this is just not the way it's supposed to go. The only thing you could do, if you don't want to like format everything, there is one setting I think you can try, Brian, that I think might help, okay? So if you go into your settings, right, general settings, general, and if you scroll all the way down, there's something called reset, right? And there's one that's called reset network settings. And if you do that, it will reset all of your Bluetooth and network. You're going to have to re-sign in and repair your stuff. Like, you're going to have to re-sign into your Wi-Fi network and repair your Bluetooth devices. But it's not that tough. I mean, it depends on how many you have, right? But I think I would try that and see if that will help you with your Bluetooth issue. That might do it.
Okay.
And see what happens.
I'll give that a try then.
And then let's see. Someone's also mentioned that you might want to look at your equalizer settings. But I don't know if that's something that's, let's see, settings, audio effect, equalizer off. So maybe check that as well. But that's it. I think you reset your settings and see if that helps and get everything kind of back to factory. It's not going to clear off anything on your device. It's just going to reset anything that you had connected, which is Wi-Fi and also your Bluetooth devices.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, very good.
And let me know. Drop me a line at richontech.tv. I'd be curious. You can email me there. Let me know if that helped, because I've never heard of that one. So I'm curious what happened with that.
I will definitely do that. Thank you, Rich.
All right. Brian, thanks so much for calling in today. Appreciate it. Man, we've had a great show. Lots of callers. It's so interesting how a lot of the callers have to do with the iPhone, because that is kind of the primary device out here in America. A lot of people, just cell phones in general, it's like these things we carry around with us all the time. And half the time, we still don't know their capabilities. We don't know everything that's available to us on these devices. And then when you have something little like that, it's like you shouldn't be listening to your music and your music just cuts out when you get a notification. Because think about it. You think Apple didn't think that someone might get a notification while they're listening to their music on a speaker? Of course they did. So it shouldn't really work that way, but sometimes it does. One thing that a lot of people are kind of sad that's going away on the phones these days is the headphone jack. And at this point, pretty much the only manufacturer that has a headphone jack on their cell phones in a major way is Samsung. And I'm worried that they may stop, because OnePlus is a manufacturer. They make some really nice Android phones that a lot of enthusiasts like. Very solid phone for what you get. Their latest device is $530, and it's like a really nice Android device. Well, according to an interview with Tech Radar, they will be also dropping the headphone jack. So OnePlus 6T is coming up soon, and according to this interview, that's it. No more headphone jack. They said that 59% of their community already has wireless headphones, and they're going to include an adapter in the box. And here's the thing. The adapter's fine, but it's just kind of nice to have that little headphone jack, because sometimes you find yourself in a situation where you don't have an adapter, or you don't feel like using an adapter, or maybe you just don't want that. Maybe you want to charge your phone and have a headphone plugged in at the same time. And I get it. It's getting old school. But at the same time, this company dropping it just shows that it's going away. That's it. All this analog stuff that we knew about in our lives is gone. All these things are turning digital. Remember when the CD drive went off computers? Remember when Apple slowly but surely killed off all these little things, and now they're gone. Headphone jack is just going to be one of them. And I personally do a lot of video creation on my phone, and I like to plug in a microphone with the headphone jack, and I won't be able to do that. So lots of adapters. I guess that's what the solution is. Lots of adapters all over the place. Thanks so much for having me on the show today. I'm Rich DeMuro. It's been my pleasure filling in for Leo Laporte. I'd love it if you find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can do all that at richontech.tv. That's going to do it. Thanks to everyone here at Twit that helped me get on the air, supported me in this whole thing. And thanks to you for calling in. I do appreciate it. I will see you on KTLA News Channel 5 and here next week. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.